Hi, I'm Nelson Searcy, and welcome to How to Plan and Conduct an Effective Christmas Offering. In this resource, we're going to discuss every single stage of developing a Christmas offering, from scratch to implementation to celebration. And I thank you for picking up this resource. Because you're joining me, that says that you love the local church, that you love developing people, helping them become fully developing stewards, and that you enjoy raising resources for the sake of the kingdom. So thank you for joining me today. Now, the way this is broken down is we're going to spend the first part of our time together looking at every single area regarding a Christmas offering. We're going to talk about what is a Christmas offering, how much can we raise. I'm going to give you specific steps for implementing and promoting and achieving your Christmas offering goals. And, of course, we're going to talk about what those goals should be. And then we're going to look at what do you do when you complete your Christmas offering and hit your Christmas offering goal, as well as what do you do when you miss your Christmas offering goal. And then, of course, we're going to talk about how you finish this year's Christmas offering so that you set yourself up for success regarding next year's Christmas offering. And I'm going to ask and answer all of the questions that you've had regarding a Christmas offering. Now, my journey with the Christmas offering is over a decade old. In fact, at the time I've recorded this resource, I've had hands-on personal experience with 10 specific years of raising money for a Christmas offering in the church that I started, entitled The Journey Church. And The Journey Church started in 2002, and it was shortly thereafter that we planned our very first Christmas offering. Now, I'm not going to talk a lot about that very first Christmas offering because, to be honest with you, it didn't go so well, but I learned. I learned from that first experience. I learned from our successes. I learned from our misses. I learned from our failures. And after 10 years and working with Christmas offerings at our church, we've raised several million dollars for the sake of the kingdom, for the sake of missions, for the sake of church planting, for the sake of capital improvement, for the sake of kids ministries in our church, and different areas that we'll talk about as we go along. But then in 2004, I started coaching other pastors. And in the span of about 6 years, I actually coached over 1,000 pastors on how to plan and conduct an effective Christmas offering. And I haven't kept a total of every dollar that we've raised during that time, but I can say that in working with other churches during a very specific period of time, we literally raised tens of millions of dollars for the sake of the kingdom. So what I hope to bring to bear in this resource is all of that experience, all of those lessons learned, all of those objections that have been answered and dealt with in my church and hundreds of other churches around the world, as well as the experience of a proven track record to help you succeed. So this is going to be a very powerful resource. It's probably going to be one that you want to listen to over and over and over, perhaps every year, 3 or 4 months before Christmas, so that you can get ready for this Christmas offering. Now, because of this, there are dozens of resources that complement this audio portion that you're listening to. For example, if you are listening to this on CD, there is no doubt a separate CD that is just resources. And then if you're listening to this perhaps as an MP3 or a download of some type, then there is an area on the internet where you can download the additional resources. And what I want to draw your attention to right now is the Listener's Guide. And it's simply titled The Listener's Guide. It should be the first resource available to you. So I would encourage you to go ahead and pause the resource, take just a moment, find the Listener's Guide, and download that and print that for every person who is listening. Now, you should know that as I'm teaching, I am expecting that it's just you listening, but this resource is also appropriate for you to listen to with several others. So if you want to listen to this with a stewardship team or with a Christmas offering team or with your staff, that would be perfectly appropriate as we go along. Just be sure you print out one copy of the listener's guide for each person who is sitting around the audio. Then, in addition to the listener's guide, what you will find in the resources area is you will find dozens of documents, letters, samples, PDF files, graphics, printed materials, as well as additional audio materials, sermons, samples, everything that I can possibly give you to help you achieve Christmas offering success, because that's what I want. By the time you finish and implement the tools I'm going to give you in this training, I want you to be able to be an expert on a Christmas offering, and I want you to develop a strategy that's going to last you this year, next year, and for every year to come. And so hopefully I'll be able to achieve that during our time together. But thank you for joining me, and I think now it's time to get started with the foundation of what is a Christmas offering. What is a Christmas offering? I suppose to answer that question, we need to start at the beginning. And perhaps in the spirit of the famous coach, Vince Lombardi, who began each season by holding up a football in front of his new recruits, and he would say, "Gentlemen, this is a football." So as we begin our journey into discovering how to effectively implement a Christmas offering, let's begin with a simple definition. What is a Christmas offering? So here it is. A Christmas offering is, by definition, a special offering given during a set period of time around Christmas that encourages people to give over and above their regular tithes and offering. I'll say that one more time in your listener's guide. A Christmas offering is a special offering given during a set period of time around Christmas that encourages people to give over and above their regular tithes and offerings. Now, we're going to go into a lot of detail regarding this and exactly how you achieve this purpose of a Christmas offering, but let's look at that definition and let's break it apart to make sure that we're all on the same page as we begin our discussion. So, first of all, it's a Christmas offering. Now, you do not necessarily have to call the specific offering you do in your church a Christmas offering. As I mentioned, I have a decade worth of experience that I'm bringing to bear in this resource, and there have been years where I've referred to our offering around Christmas as a Christmas offering. There's been other years where I've given it a special name, such as Now is the Time offering, or the Beyond the City offering, or the Beyond Our Borders offering. So you don't have to necessarily call it a Christmas offering, but for our purposes, the generic term of the special offering that we do around the Christmas period is that it is a Christmas offering. It's a special offering. In other words, it's not the regular tithe and offering. Now, by calling it a special offering, I mean that it is in addition to the regular tithe and offering, but it is a special offering that's done during a set period of time. And I think that set period of time is important because the time period is set. There's a start date for this offering, and there's also an end date for this offering. And we're going to talk about how you discern what the start date should be and how you determine what the end date should be, and even how you determine if you need to extend that end date along the way. And I'm not going to extend it the way you think that I'm going to extend it. In other words, I'm not going to suggest that you extend it if you do not hit your goal. But I'll talk to you about that a little bit later on. But it is a set period of time. And that makes it different from your regular tithes and offerings. You receive your regular tithes and offerings throughout the year. Now, I will tell you that in my experience, the churches that have had the most impact in the Christmas offering have been those who have very few other special offerings during the year that compete with it. So this is a Christmas offering, and maybe if in your church you've commonly had a special New Year's offering, a special Groundhog Day's offering, a special Easter offering, a special July the 4th offering, a special Labor Day offering, that is going to actually hinder your ability to have an effective Christmas offering. So generally what I found is those churches that do the best regarding a Christmas offering have one or at the most two special offerings during the year. And I know for some of you, this may be countercultural because many of you come from denominations where you have a specific offering around Easter, let's say, and then another specific offering around Christmas. I, too, come from a tradition where that has been standard operating procedure. But what I've done is I've actually folded those two together. I've taken next year's Easter offering. I've rolled that into this year's Christmas offering. And the very projects that I would generally raise money for at two separate times, I now raise money for at one specific time, which is the Christmas period. Now, you don't have to decide that, but I just want you to know that if you have multiple special offerings throughout the year, that's actually going to hurt the impact of this one big special offering. Because what we've discovered is there is no better time than Christmas to raise money for specific causes in your church. So it's a set period of time around Christmas. And then occasionally I hear people say, well, I'm not sure we should do the Christmas offering around Christmas. Well, the thinking behind this goes that people are already spending so much at Christmas. They're already buying expensive gifts. They've been saving perhaps all year to make a difference. They're already putting presents under the tree, and they may be a little tapped out when it comes to cash. Now, on the surface, that sounds like a reasonable argument, but I want to reframe this for you. First of all, Christmas is the celebration of the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And of course, in the Christmas story, there is the tradition of bringing gifts to his birth. The wise men, of course, bring gifts to Jesus, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And yes, I am resisting making any kind of childish joke about Christmas, because if I am a pastor, and pastors know all kinds of jokes about the gifts that were brought to Jesus at Christmas, but these particular wise men, they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, we know from a historical standpoint, they probably didn't bring it at the very day of the birth of Jesus. They brought it some period of time afterwards. But the point is that we give gifts on Christmas because of this tradition of the wise men bringing gifts to Mary, Joseph, and baby Jesus at Christmas. And so there is something in our culture, there's something in the Christian tradition, there's something even in the greater secular culture where we give gifts around Christmas time. And so, first of all, there's a biblical theological argument to be made for bringing special gifts to the purposes of Christ around Christmas. At the same time, if you look at what has happened around Christmas, this is a tremendous period of fundraising for other nonprofits and other ministries. I mean, it's not coincidental that the number one time that the Salvation Army chooses to stand outside of shopping centers with their bucket and with their bells and ask people to give to those little red buckets, that it's Christmas time. And so Christmas time is a very, very effective time. In fact, many, many ministries, and I've directed nonprofit ministries in the past, where as much as 30 to 40% of the giving comes in during the last month of the year. So it does seem as if people are more charitable, more willing to give during the Christmas season. And so what you can do in your church is you can tap into this charitable giving, this willingness to give. And yes, people are buying gifts, but it's because they are open to giving and because they're in the giving mood that they will be more willing to give during this Christmas period. So don't worry too much about pushing your people too hard, or don't worry too much about it being a bad time of the year. You know, the truth is there's always a reason not to do an offering. You know, if you wanted to make this a New Year's offering, you could say, well, now that all the Christmas bills are coming due. If you wanted to make it a February offering, you could say, well, February is generally a crunch time. You know, if you wanted to make it a summer offering, you could say, well, people are always going to be tapped because they're going on summer vacation. The truth is there's always an excuse for not to do something. So I'm just asking you to trust the experience of ministries around the world and my experience in working with hundreds of churches to tell you that Christmas is a great time to do a Christmas offering. And if you've never done this before, I encourage you to try it boldly, and trust God for the results. But it is around the Christmas period. Now, this period may start as early as November, and it may go as late as January of the new year. So when I say Christmas, it doesn't necessarily mean an offering that is given on Christmas Day. Now, you may choose to do that. In fact, that is one specific strategy that you may decide to use from listening to this resource. You may decide to give an offering on Christmas Day. And certainly you can raise funds for the kingdom. You can raise funds for very specific and needy purposes on Christmas Day. But generally, the churches that are most effective, they make it into a period of time, perhaps 2 to 3 weeks before Christmas, or perhaps even as much as a month and a half before Christmas, and then even a month after Christmas. In my church, the most effective period we use for raising money for the Christmas offering is to start somewhere around the first or second week of November and let our Christmas offering run all the way to the end of January. So it's not unusual for us to have a Christmas offering that begins, say, November 7th or November 14th and goes all the way to January 31. And I'll talk to you about the logic of that as well as what we've learned along the way. But if you're a newbie at doing a Christmas offering, perhaps your first Christmas offering would be December 1 through December 31. And that may be a good place to start. I'll help you think that through a little bit later. And it's one of the initial decisions you'll have to make, which is what is going to be our set period of time. And then you'll notice the word encourages. This Christmas offering must encourage people. Now, the word encouragement actually comes from the root word to touch a heart. And so it implies the idea that you are touching people's heart, that you are motivating them in their heart or in their spirit. And so the Christmas offering has to touch people's heart. It has to motivate them. And a little bit later, we're going to look at some of the specific purposes of a Christmas offering, and you will see how the best offerings touch people's heart and it motivates them to give. Now, in other resources that I have on stewardship, and I would encourage you, if you've not read my book Maximize, or if you've not listened to the basic seminar, the stewardship seminar, or then my more intense seminar, the stewardship intensive. I know I'm creative with names, but I would encourage you after this resource to pick up all of those resources and really become an expert on stewardship. You know that in those resources, I talk about the different pockets of giving. And you know, if you've ever had a pair of cargo pants, or if you've ever had a pair of camping pants, you know that they have more than the traditional two pockets up front. They may have two pockets in the back, and they may even have additional pockets, perhaps on the leg. And so when people give, they've got money in each of those pockets. Now, forgive me for such a brief explanation here, but the point in this resource is not to teach you the full stewardship system, but it's just to pull the basics from that system and apply it to a very specific strategy called the Christmas offering. But the Christmas offering is often given out of a different pocket of giving than where people normally give their regular tithes and offerings. In other words, if you can imagine a pair of pants that has five pockets, there's money that people in your church have in their front pocket that goes to tithes and offerings. But then they have another pocket that's marked missions. And then they have another pocket that's marked the future. And that may have to do with kids or buildings or something like that. They actually have another pocket that's marked building, and it has money that they would give to specific bricks and mortar projects. And then they have another pocket that would be marked, say, missions or church planting. And so people have these different pockets. Well, week to week, they give to you out of one pocket, which is their tithes and offerings, but they have money that they want to give, that they should give to honor God, out of another pocket that is perhaps marked missions or education or future. And the Christmas offering encourages them to reach into that pocket and give as well. And the reason they're not currently giving out of those other pockets is you've not touched their heart in such a way throughout the year that they're willing to release that for kingdom purposes. So the Christmas offering encourages that. And we're going to talk very specifically about what causes you need to select and what causes you should avoid if you want to encourage people to give. And then the giving must be over and above their regular tithes and offerings. Now, there's several things here that I need to point out to you. First of all, this definition does imply that the primary people who are going to give to your Christmas offering are your regular givers. And in a sense, that is going to be true. And I want to talk about that. The best people to give to the ongoing and special causes at your church are the people who are already giving. We'll come back to that. But I also want to point out that the Christmas offering is a fantastic time to raise new givers and to encourage and motivate new givers. You know, the truth is, every church has a large percentage of people that unfortunately have never given a dime to the ministry of that church. And unfortunately, even some of those are leaders. Now, if you've implemented my stewardship system, and particularly the stewardship seminar and the stewardship intensive, then you know that is a very bad way to live. But the truth is, you probably have leaders in your church who are not giving. And the Christmas offering is one of the best ways to touch their heart to get them to give. But even more importantly, beyond that, you've got dozens, if not hundreds, of people who are sitting in your church every week, and they don't give to the regular tithes and offering. But if you give them a special reason, perhaps a Christmas offering reason, that will then touch their heart in such a way that they will give for the first time. And so we found one of the best ways to mobilize initial giving in our church is through a Christmas offering. And many people will trace back their path to becoming a regular giver, and then to become a tither, and then eventually to become an extravagant giver, to the giving of $50 or $100 or even $500 to a Christmas offering. And for whatever reason, non-givers are more willing to give to a special offering that's for specific purposes over a specific period of time than they are sometimes to just start giving to the regular tithes and offerings. So this is a tremendous side benefit to the Christmas offering. And as you do the follow-up to the Christmas offering, and we'll talk about this later, you'll want to pay specific attention to those people who give to the Christmas offering for the first time, and then you'll want to leverage those people from initial givers to become regular givers. And that's where the trade-off and handoff from this resource to the stewardship resource would be made, and that may be something you want to listen to next. But let's go back to our regular tithes and offerings. The majority of the people who give to your Christmas offering, they're going to be people who currently give to the regular tithes and offering. And so in one sense, you need to educate them on the fact that the Christmas offering is in addition to their regular tithes and offerings. It's above and beyond the regular tithes and offerings. And as we go through the promotional material and as we go through the very specific steps you'll take, you'll see that language in both what we talk about in this audio portion as well as in the letters and samples and everything that I'm going to give you to help you implement the Christmas offering. But you challenge people to give over and above. So the way this might work is, let's say you have someone in your church and they consistently give $50 a week. and that is their regular tithes and offerings. So they consistently give $50 a week, $50 a week, $50 a week. When it comes to the Christmas offering, your challenge is for them to give, here's a very important word, sacrificially. They are to give sacrificially over and above their regular tithes and offerings. And I would encourage you to do some study on sacrificial giving. I'm not going to repeat the teaching here because I have this in other resources that I mentioned before that I have on stewardship. But the Bible is very clear that from time to time, the people of God should give sacrificially to very specific purposes. Perhaps the best example of that was in the Church of Antioch and in the Church of Jerusalem in the book of Acts. And you can study that on your own. But you are to give sacrificially from time to time. So you have this person or this couple who's been giving $50 a week every week, and then you challenge them during the Christmas offering period. Now, they may decide to give a one-time specific gift to the Christmas offering, and that would be very legitimate. In fact, I often say to people, when they ask me, how much should I give to a Christmas offering? I would say, think about how much you're going to spend on your most expensive Christmas gift. And they might say, I'm going to spend $300 on the most expensive Christmas gift. Then I would say, I would encourage you to match that gift or to give that same amount to the Lord Jesus Christ during this Christmas offering period. In other words, give your best gift to Jesus. Now, you may not like my language, that may not fit your culture, but I think you see my point. As we're giving gifts to everybody else, you know, we're giving them to brothers and sisters and moms and dads and kids and neighbors and relatives and the boss at work and everybody else that we're giving gifts to, let's make sure that we give a very specific and our largest and best gift to the church and to the ministry of the Christmas offering to our Lord Jesus Christ. So in this case, the person who might give $50, $50, $50 every week, they might indeed bring a one-time gift for $300. Or more likely, what they would need to do is spread that out over a period of time, because it may be very difficult for them to give a one-time gift of $300. So what they might do at the first Sunday during the Christmas offering is they might set aside an additional $30. So they normally would give $50 to the tithes and offerings, then they would give $30 for the next 10 weeks or so to the Christmas offering. And you can help people see during the Christmas offering how much a $10 gift in addition to your tithe and offering each week would add up to over the course of 10 weeks. And that's another reason for making this a period of time. As I mentioned, we do it from the middle of November to the end of January, and that's about a 10-week period. So people can easily say, I want to give $1,000 to the Christmas offering. I'll divide that up into 10 $100 gifts, or I want to give $100, and I'll divide that up into 10 $10 gifts. And I hope I did the math right. I'm not so much worried about the math right now as much as I am helping you understand that even one person who's giving $20 a week or $50 a week, if they give just a little bit over and above their regular giving, then they can give a significant amount of money to the Christmas offering. And people will do that. In fact, many people will just double their tithe. It makes the offering easy to count. You know, they're filling out their offering envelope and they normally give $50, so they just put another $50 into the Christmas offering during this set period of time. And it's not uncommon for as much as 25 to 30% of your people to give a double tithe during the period. I should note that I personally do not normally encourage people using that language of a double tithe. I think that in people's minds, it sounds bigger than it really is. But I have noticed if you compare gifts that people do often just double what they normally give. So if they normally give 20, they give an additional 40. But I do challenge people to give over and above their regular tithes. And we'll look at how we do that. We'll look at how that's structured. And then as you look at the accompanying resources, you'll see in different letters that I write and in different motivating materials that I give, I show people how they can specifically give in certain ways. And then, of course, there are a large amount of people who will give a one-time gift, and they will give over and above their regular tithes and offerings in a significant way. I found that those who own businesses, they often wait to make very large year-end gifts. And so it's not uncommon for us to receive a $50,000 gift or a $100,000 gift, or more likely for us to receive a number of $1,000 gifts or a number of $5,000 gifts, particularly from someone who owns a business. And at the end of the year, as they are preparing their financial report, they realize they could make a one-time charitable gift of a significant purpose. And I've seen small business owners do that. I've seen people who have private practices like lawyers and doctors. And I've specifically seen it being in New York City in the financial world. In fact, one of the reasons that we often allow our Christmas offering to continue into the new year is because many folks need that time in order to give their specific one-time gift. In fact, in the financial industry, they often need until January to give out of their bonus checks, out of their end-of-the-year bonus checks. And so we often allow our Christmas offering to run into the new year. You have to structure this according to your culture, but don't underestimate. Even in the smallest churches, there are men and women who have businesses or receive end-of-the-year bonuses, or they have money that's been sitting around that they're going to roll over next year or need to withdraw from their Social Security or their retirement or whatever it might be, and they want to make a tithe off of that money. And giving them the special opportunity to give to the Christmas offering is very powerful. And here, of course, when I use a tithe off of a bonus check or the tithe off of an inheritance or a profit from their business or whatever, I'm talking about in addition to their regular tithes and offerings. So this can be a very powerful way to raise money. Now, one objection I often hear is, well, I'm afraid that if we do a Christmas offering, that's going to cause our end of the year giving to go down. If I push my people to give more at Christmas, won't it hurt my regular year-end tithes and offerings? Well, the short answer to that is not at all. Not at all. It really doesn't, because people are giving this over and above their regular tithes and offerings. The more detailed answer is not much. It's not going to hurt you very much. Let's say that a church has a $50,000 a month budget, and they decide over the course of a Christmas offering to try to raise an additional $50,000. Now, they're basically going to double that month's budget. So this is December. This is just for descriptive and illustrative purposes. Church needs $50,000 in regular giving to maintain their budget, and then they have a goal to raise an additional $50,000 in the Christmas offering. Generally speaking, there will not be much of an impact on the regular giving when you implement a Christmas offering. At worst, at the end of December, the regular giving will be $45,000 and the Christmas offering will hit the goal of $50,000. So in a sense, your regular giving did decrease by 10%, but the money that you raised in the Christmas offering was double your monthly budget, and so your net increase is 90% additional. Now, you can think about that logic, but generally speaking, there is no loss of regular giving through the Christmas offering, period. In fact, because the Christmas offering period coincides with end-of-the-year giving, we generally see an increase in the regular tithes and offerings during November and December, while at the same time seeing tremendous amounts of money given to the Christmas offering. Now, I want to be clear. I want you to think of the Christmas offering as more than just a fundraising opportunity. I want you to think about it in more than just dollar amounts. But I think dealing with these objections and understanding the definition of the Christmas offering can be so powerful. So as we conclude this section, let me go back to the definition of what is a Christmas offering. A Christmas offering is, by definition, a special offering given during a set period of time around Christmas that encourages people to give over and above their regular tithes and offerings. So I'm sure by now you're thinking, well, what should that set period of time be for me? And then how exactly do I determine what is going to touch people's heart so that they give out of these different pockets? And how do I encourage them to do that through my promotion and through my timeline? And then what is the specific amount that I'm going to raise, because I'm going to need a goal for this as well? Well, I'm going to get to all of that. And all of that is very important, and having a specific goal for how much you're trying to raise is extremely important as well. But before we get to the tactics, we first need to deal with the why. So let's talk about why conduct a Christmas offering at all. And we've looked at the definition, and in a sense, maybe we should have started with the why. But many of you, I know, are waiting for me to get to the what and the who and the where and the how, and you want me to get into specific tactics, and I'm certainly going to do that, and I'm going to give you dozens of documents, and then, of course, later, I'm going to walk you through this 40-point checklist of everything you need to do to promote a Christmas offering. But I think it's very, very important that we understand the why. As I just mentioned, the Christmas offering is more than just a specific fundraising opportunity for your church. Although I don't want to discount that. And I never try to discount how important money is to a local church. I don't know if your bank is like mine, but the bank where we have our church account, they do not like us to go into the red. In fact, we cannot go into the red, even though, of course, we do have financial safeguards in our church and all of that. They need us to stay in the black. So I can't underestimate how important having money is. And starting a new church requires money. Sending missionaries around the world requires money. Making a difference in the community and doing evangelism requires money. Now, money's not everything. In fact, in another resource that I have called the Evangelism Seminar, I tell you very honestly that evangelism is rarely a money problem. It's almost always an idea problem. But the truth is, money is important. I think about a quote by the famous businessman Zig Ziglar. Ziglar said, money isn't all that important, but it is right up there with oxygen. And I think if you've ever had a financial crunch in your church or you've ever had to lead a church during a financial turnaround, you know how important that is. So I don't want to discount the fundraising of the church, but I believe at minimum that is the sixth most important why regarding why you should conduct a Christmas offering. So let me give you four or five reasons why you should conduct a Christmas offering. And I want you to make your own list as well. In fact, in your listener's guide, you will see some of my whys, but I want you also to think of your whys. What would you add to this list? And honestly, my hope would be that as you work through this, either individually or with a group of people that might be listening together or listening individually and then coming together for a discussion, maybe you can make as many as 10 or 15 reasons why you should conduct a Christmas offering. Because the truth is, the more powerful your whys, the greater your ability to implement the whats of the Christmas offering. In fact, it was one ancient philosopher who said, the greater your reason why, the more likely you are to accomplish the what. I think he said it more eloquently, something to the effect of, if you have enough reasons why, you can accomplish almost any what or any how. And so that's certainly true. And so as we get into the what and the whens and the how and all of that to the Christmas offering, we need to start here with the why. So let me give you four or five, and then you add to that along the way. The first, and I think one of the most important reasons, if not the single most important reason, to conduct a Christmas offering is because God commands us to give sacrificially. God commands it. You know, when you read the scripture, God commands you to give in four different ways. And I go into greater detail in this in my other seminars on stewardship, like the stewardship seminar. God commands, of course, that you first start giving, that you give in an initial way. And often when someone starts attending a church, they're more of a tipper than they are a tither. So they start giving in an initial kind of fashion. They become a beginner, an initial giver. And then from there, a person moves to becoming a regular giver. This is where somebody gives when they get paid. They're not necessarily giving the full tithe yet, but they're giving every time they come to church. They're giving every time they get paid or every time they make a profit or whatever it might be in their situation. Then beyond that, you have a proportional giver. So you have initial givers, systematic givers, and then proportional givers. And these are your tithers. These are people who bring the full tithe. They not only give when they get paid, but they give a set percentage of how much they get paid, minimum 10% and hopefully above and beyond that as they grow. And then the next step beyond that is what it can be called sacrificial givers or extravagant givers. And so in essence, you've got five types of givers in your church. You've got non-givers, people who aren't giving anything. You've got initial givers, those who are giving maybe a dollar or two or $5 every so often. Then you've got your regular givers, those who give when they get paid. They're not giving a full tithe, but they are giving something regularly. Then you've got your tithers or your proportional givers. And then that highest level of giving is the extravagant level of giving. Now, the goal of an effective stewardship system is to move people along this five-step process and to move everyone eventually to become an extravagant giver. But the way to do that, and one of the most effective ways to do that, and one of the ways that we see modeled in Scripture is through a special offering where every level is stretched to give a bit more than what they're giving now. So the non-giver is stretched to give something to a specific cause. The regular giver is stretched to give over and above their regular giving. The tither is stretched to give sacrificially beyond the tithe. And the extravagant giver continues to enjoy the blessing of giving to multiple causes within the church. So God commands us to give sacrificially. And of course, the Christmas offering models this idea of giving with the wise men who brought the gifts to Jesus. And then the early church modeled sacrificial giving with particularly the church at Antioch and the church at Jerusalem. Now, there's Bible studies that you can do on sacrificial giving, and the purpose of my talk now is not to go into a specific Bible study, but I want you to understand that from time to time, God commands his people to stretch beyond their regular giving to give sacrificially. Now, why does God do that? Well, for one thing, it moves you up to the next level. A lot of non-givers become regular givers during the Christmas offering period. So by challenging them to give sacrificially during this set period of time, you then normalize their giving. And they do it for a 4-week period, or they do it for a 10-week period during the Christmas offering. But then once the Christmas offering ends, they continue to give week after week and month after month regarding that. So it does help non-givers to give sacrificially. It stretches them to give. Now, for a non-giver to give sacrificially, that may simply be $5 a week to the Christmas offering. But it starts the process for them giving. And then it moves everybody else up a level as well. Oftentimes, those who are giving regularly, they double what they're giving to the Christmas offering, and that moves them closer to giving a full tithe. Or someone who's been living at the minimum level, what I call threshold level giving, which is the tithe level, they start giving sacrificially, and they reap the blessings of the giving, and so now they remain people who give over and above their tithe, even when the Christmas offering isn't going. And of course, your extravagant givers model the way. Because the higher you move up in those five levels, what I call the generosity ladder, the more God blesses you. And so God begins to bless his people as they give more sacrificially. And that, of course, is another reason that God commands it. God wants you to be like him. And the Bible says that God is a giver. In fact, the most famous verse in the Bible, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave. He gave. God is a giver, and so he commands us to excel in all things, including the grace of giving. So if there's no other reason to do a Christmas offering, this one is foundational. Why should we do it? Because God commands us to give sacrificially. Now, beyond that, related to that is the idea of helping your people grow. So why should we give? To help your people grow. One of the greatest spiritual growth tools that you've got at your hands is the Christmas offering. Now, there are other spiritual growth tools that are very effective as well. In fact, I'm a huge fan of small groups, and I think that's very powerful. I think the weekend worship service is very powerful. But let's not discount the connection between giving and growth. If you want the people of your church to become fully developing followers of Jesus, they have to also become fully developing stewards of their resources. And so I would encourage you, don't think of the Christmas offering as a fundraising campaign. Think of it as a spiritual growth campaign, because that's exactly what it is. It's a spiritual growth campaign that happens to be tied to a specific dollar amount that is trying to be raised. But ultimately, your people will grow. They will grow in their giving, as we just talked about, but also they will grow in their faith, because as they give more, there's a greater trust in God. They will grow in their relationship with God, because as they commit to these areas of giving, God then blesses their life in return. They'll grow in their awareness of the work of God. You know, somebody came to me one time and said, how do I develop a greater heart for missions? I said, well, start giving to mission causes. And so when somebody through your Christmas offering starts giving to a missionary in Africa or a missionary in India or a missionary somewhere around the world or in North America or wherever it might be, then where their money goes, their heart flows. And of course, that's the verse Jesus said, that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so it engages their heart in godly purposes. And if you're trying to raise money for the children's ministry through your Christmas offering, then of course, people will become more passionate about that Christmas offering. So God blesses them in a very intangible way, but then their heart is moved in a very tangible way. And then there is a general feeling of drawing closer to God. Because when people give, when people are obedient to what God says they should do, then that draws them closer to God. And in a very real, powerful way, sometimes as people are struggling with other areas, as they start moving their heart toward God through the Christmas offering, they find a freedom or a breakthrough from those other areas of sin as well. I've seen the Christmas offering bring married couples closer together. I've seen the Christmas offering help someone who's been struggling with their faith to really begin to go deeper in their faith. And I've even seen God use the Christmas offering to bring non-Christians to faith in him, because this giving is such a powerful tool. So don't underestimate how much your people will grow during this. So don't see it just as a way to raise dollars for your budget, but see it as a way to help your people become fully developing followers, to fulfill the Great Commission, to become a disciple. And I love the quote by Randy Alcorn where he said, it's impossible to be a disciple without also being a steward. In other words, stewardship is discipleship. And so the Christmas offering is a discipleship tool. But at the same time, the Christmas offering can be an evangelism tool or to be a missions tool. And so another reason to conduct a Christmas offering is to give to missions or to give to evangelism. So to expand God's purposes in the world or to expand God's purposes in your local area, to expand the impact of your local church in evangelism, to expand the glory of God around the world. And there's no greater cause to give to in your Christmas offering than to give to missions. And traditionally, this has been how denominations have raised money for missions. In fact, I come out of a denominational tradition where around Christmas time, we raise money for what they used to call home missions, or now what we call national missions. And then the Easter offering was to raise money for international missions, or what they used to call foreign missions. And denominations have done this historically because missions is a very powerful reason for people to give locally and then to give internationally. Now, what I've done is I've taken the Easter offering, I've rolled it back into the Christmas offering, and now we have one offering that's bigger than any two individual offerings combined, and we give to local missions, we give to international missions, we also give to evangelism, local evangelism that our church is going to be very involved in, because I believe that the light that shines furthest must shine brightest at home. So if you're going to be strong internationally in missions, you have to be strong locally in evangelism. So it's about giving to evangelism, and it's about giving to local areas as well. So there is money to be raised for missions and evangelism, and that's a very powerful reason why. Related to that, another reason why is to support worthy causes inside and around your local church. To support local causes inside and around your local church. Now, what might those worthy causes be? Well, there might be causes around your local church that are very important. When we raise money for the homeless shelter, or we raise money for the ministries that provide food or clothing to those who are in need, we do that often through the Christmas offering. These are very worthy causes. When we raise money for our people to go on mission trips, that's done through the Christmas offering. We don't have ongoing fundraisers throughout the year. We roll everything into this one big offering. And then at the same time, there's worthy causes inside of your church. We'll talk about those in just a moment as we look at the different heart areas of a church, but there are worthy causes inside of your church. There's evangelism causes. There's special promotions that you need to do. There's things related to students or to children that you need to raise money for. There are worthy causes inside of your church. And sometimes there are worthy causes inside of your church that do not capture the hearts of people. For example, you need new lights for the parking lot. That does not capture people's heart, but it is a worthy cause, and I will show you that there's even a way to raise that for your Christmas offering. It won't be your primary motive, but it can be a third or fourth tier motive for people giving to the Christmas offering. I'll get to that in just a moment. Well, this is my list of reasons why, and you can expand that. And of course, I have others as well. And every year when I get ready to think through the strategies for our upcoming Christmas offering, I make a list of reasons why. And in times past, I've had church planting on this list. Why? Because we need to start a new location for our church, or we need to fund a church plant. Or why? Because next year we're doing a specific initiative that we have. And so my whys that I often have are very, very specific to my local church. These ones that I've given you here, they're very generic. But I want you to think through, and I want you to make a list of at least 10 reasons why. And in many ways, the more reasons you have for why you should do your Christmas offering, the more effective you're going to be in raising money and mobilizing your people and seeing God grow your people and bless your church during the Christmas offering period. So as you can see, why is very, very powerful. As you're now beginning to see, pre-planning is very, very important. In fact, pre-planning is the key to an effective Christmas offering. You know, you can't wait until halfway through December to decide that you want to pull this off. Well, actually, I'll tell you a story of somebody who can. I was leading a coaching network with about 20 pastors, and we were sitting around the table. And during the month of October, I had given them much of this training that I'm giving you today, and I'd sent them out to do a Christmas offering. And the majority of the folks there had agreed, but there was one person who was absent that day. He had missed the October session. And so he comes back in November, and he's hearing what everybody has done from the previous month regarding the Christmas offering. And most everybody was getting ready to roll out their Christmas offering that second week of November, and so he was uncertain. Then he comes back to the second month after he missed, the month of December, and now people are beginning to share how much has already been raised. In fact, one person who had set a goal to raise $1,500 in a brand new church that was averaging less than 100, they had already hit their Christmas offering goal. So we spent some time in our coaching network in that December talking to him about how he would increase that goal and how he could perhaps now raise double or even triple that amount. Other people had already seen folks give substantial gifts of $1,000 or $5,000. So now the gentleman who had missed the initial discussion back in October, he's getting pretty excited and he's beginning to realize he's missing out. So I work with him here on December 8th to develop a real quick short-term strategy where all he did was send a letter, like some of the ones you see in the resource documents, to send a letter to the key people in his church. He had a church of about 300 at the time, so he wrote a letter to about 40 people inside of his church. That's part of a principle I call the 10% principle, that there's always 10% of people in your church that you need to communicate with first. He wrote them a letter. He dropped it in the mail on December 15th, and he asked them to bring a special Christmas offering gift to their Christmas Eve service that was then coming up some 8 days later. And out of that one initiative, just planning for that letter and seeing what we had done over the previous weeks, he raised over $10,000 in special gifts from literally 40 people inside of his church. And so I say to you, pre-planning is the key, but if you happen to be listening to this on December 8th, I want you to know that you can stay with me and you can get a letter in the mail on December 15th, and you too might be able to raise a significant portion for your Christmas offering. Now, granted, this letter was a very powerful letter, and this letter had some great causes in it. Now, you may say, well, do I have a copy of that letter? No, I don't have a copy of that letter, but I tell you, the samples that I'm giving you are pretty much the same because the causes are so important, because what people give to are the heart issues that you touch. I'm going to talk about that next, but I want you to understand for now that pre-planning is very important. And so I want to give you some general thoughts on that. You can't wait until halfway through December if you want to pull this off in a big way. But if you do wait to halfway through December, you still can get some fruit. But ideally, you're listening to this right now, perhaps in October, or perhaps even at the very latest in early November. But if you are listening to it some other time of the year, just go ahead and put on your calendar when you're going to begin your pre-planning. I generally tell people, with very little planning or effort, say if you plan a month in advance, you might be able to raise 2 to 3 times your regular giving. But then if you plan more than that, you're able to raise even more. So let's talk about that for just a moment. How much can we raise during the Christmas offering? How much can we raise? Well, as I said, pre-planning is the key. So it's raising money for the Christmas offering and determine a specific goal is really important. And I would encourage you to set a specific goal for your Christmas offering, a specific dollar amount that you are going to attempt to raise. Now, in order to set this dollar amount, one of the key numbers that you need is how much is your current weekly offering? And most churches are able to figure this out. They have a budget, but more importantly than your budget, how much is actually being given so far on an average weekly basis? For example, maybe you're listening to this in October, and you look back over the previous 9 months, and you had budgeted $10,000 a week, but you actually are only bringing in $9,000 a week. Well, the more important number there, of course, is the $9,000. The important number is what has been your average giving per week to date? And so how much have you been raising? Maybe your budget was $10,000, but you're a little ahead of that and people have been giving close to $11,000. Well, then you would operate based on what that average weekly giving number is. And then once you know what that number is, then you can think, okay, how hard am I willing to push this Christmas offering? How far in advance am I able to plan this Christmas offering? What's the period of time through which we're going to try to accomplish the Christmas offering, and then to set a godly number for that offering? If you are doing the offering, say, for only 1 month, it's very realistic to think that you will only be able to raise perhaps 2 times your weekly budget. So if you are doing the focus for a 30-day period, say from December 1 to December 31st, and you have a month or 6 weeks to prepare, it's a good goal to say we might be able to raise 2 times our regular budget. So if your regular giving is $10,000, your goal for that 1 month period might be $20,000. And again, it's $10,000 per week. And so your weekly budget through the month of December would be $40,000, but your Christmas offering goal would be $20,000. If you're able to plan further in advance, say starting in October, then you would be able to raise more. If you do a longer period of time, say from the 1st of November through the end of January, then it's very likely that you could raise far more. In fact, at optimal levels, if you start your planning in October and you use the resources that I've given you, the documents and the letters and the offering envelopes and all of that that I'm giving you, you modify those in November for your church, or excuse me, in October for your church, then you roll out your Christmas offering in November. It is very likely that between the middle of November and the end of January, you can raise as much as 6 times your weekly offering. Now, that's a very advanced system. And we have a very advanced system at our church, and it's not unusual for me to raise 6 to 8 times our weekly offering throughout this 10-week period. But if you're doing it for the first time, let me encourage you to set a much lower goal. Now, I know nobody likes to set lower goals, but that is something very important. When it comes to the Christmas offering, you want to make sure you hit and exceed your goal. And I'm all about setting stretch goals, and I'm all about pulling people up. In fact, I've got a whole resource on setting and achieving godly goals. But when it comes to the Christmas offering, I'm asking you to back it off just a little bit, to be more, if you will, conservative in setting your Christmas offering goal, because I think it's really important that you hit that goal. So in this brief discussion of how much can we raise, there's been a couple of things that you've had to think about right now. You've had to think about the time period for your Christmas offering. If you can, make the time period for your Christmas offering from middle November to the end of January. If you're not comfortable with that, then make it from Thanksgiving through the end of December. If that further stretches you or it doesn't fit with your culture, then your next best option would be December 1 to December 31. And then at minimum, if you can't do anything else, make it the 2 weeks around Christmas, say December 15th to December 31. Even if you plan to officially end your Christmas offering on December 25th, from a promotion standpoint, I would encourage you to allow people to give to December 31 so that you can clear people who mail in their gifts or people who maybe forget on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day as well. But that's your options when it comes. You can do a 10-week period from the middle of November to the end of January. You could, I suppose, do an 11 or 12 week period from the 1st of November to the end of January. That would be as long as I would want you to make it. Then after that, you can do a 6 week period, say from Thanksgiving through the end of December. Then the next step would be to do a 4 week period, which is all throughout the month of December. And then, of course, if you have a reason to extend it into the new year, you could. We'll talk about that before we wrap up. And then at minimum, a 2 week period around Christmas. Now, some of you might be saying, well, I just want to do a 1 day offering, and I'm going to do it on that last Sunday before Christmas, or I'm going to do it on Christmas Eve. And certainly you can do that. In fact, one of my mentors who pastors a church of over 10,000, they do a significant offering just on Christmas Eve, and they raise literally $1 million just on Christmas Eve. Now, one thing you should understand is this is a church of over 10,000. The other thing is you should understand they've been doing that for 30 years. So many people look at that and say, well, that's something that we can do immediately. You're not going to raise that kind of money on 1 day unless you have a very advanced system like they have for the Christmas offering. And that is about 8 times, I think, their weekly budget at this point. So you're not going to raise 8 times your weekly budget on 1 day, but you might be able to raise 4 times your weekly budget over 6 weeks. You might be able to raise 6 times your weekly budget over 12 weeks. So there is some thinking that has to go into this. There's some pre-planning. Now, I don't have a worksheet for you to work through. In your listener's guide, of course, there's a place for you to put a date. And so right now, in your listener's guide, there's a place for a start date and an end date. And you can continue to finesse that throughout the rest of this resource. In fact, as we start talking about what the offering will be used for, and I start finessing some of the specifics of the offering, you may come back to this start date and end date in your Christmas offering. But go ahead and think about that right now. And then also in your listener's guide, there's a place for you to write down your weekly giving so far this year. So your average weekly giving year to date. So what is that number? Figure that out. Now, again, it's better to underestimate than overestimate. If you think it's $1,000 a week, but you're not sure, budget off of $750 a week. Don't put yourself into a corner because, again, I think it's very important that you hit the goal, especially your first year out. Now, I have pretty much reached the point where year after year, we do the middle of November to the end of January. But I suppose there could be specific purposes and specific reasons that we would choose to do a smaller period or we would choose to adapt that period. But you have to think about that through the lens of your church. I will say that some of you might think, well, I'm in the middle of a capital campaign. Should I still do the Christmas offering? Or we are about to launch a capital campaign, perhaps in January or February of the next year. Should I still do a Christmas offering? Well, the capital campaign, more than anything else, affects these two areas. It affects the goal you're going to set and the time period around which you're trying to reach that goal. It does not negate the fact of you doing a Christmas offering. You can do a Christmas offering on top of a capital campaign. And it goes back to earlier, the pockets of giving idea. You see, people who are giving to the regular tithes and offerings out of one pocket, people who are giving to bricks and mortar out of another pocket, they still have money to give in a third pocket for missions or for children or for education or for the future. And so you still can raise that money. But if people are being stretched through the regular tithes and offerings, stretched through the capital campaign, you may decide to set a smaller goal for your Christmas offering, or you may decide to set a shorter time period for your Christmas offering. But since that is such a unique situation for churches that would be going into a capital campaign or in a capital campaign, for most of you that doesn't apply at all. But I suppose if there are extenuating circumstances in your church, such as maybe there was some disaster in your community or some big relief effort in your community earlier in the year, that could mean that you would shorten the Christmas offering period and perhaps lower the Christmas offering goal. But don't allow these external things to negate the Christmas offering. It's still possible to raise two times your weekly budget or at minimum one time your weekly budget for specific causes, even if people have given to other causes throughout the year. So think this through. Start date, end date, average weekly giving year to date, and then what is going to be your goal? And then most importantly, be sure you pray about this. Take this to the Lord. And as you continue to listen to the rest of this resource and as we go through the checklist and all of the specific details I still have to give you, let God speak to you. As you listen to this resource, let God speak to you about what that is, because it is so critical that you get this right. And again, I want you to hit your goal. And so it's better to back off the goal and exceed that goal than it is to set a big goal and then not achieve it. Because the Christmas offering, you want to leave people feeling good about what was accomplished. You want to be able to announce the achievement of a goal. Now, as I can tell you, thinking about the last 10 Christmas offerings that I've conducted, I will say there were two times we didn't hit our goal. One time, we came really, really close. But the truth is, we came really, really close, but we did not hit our goal. The second time, we missed it by as much as 20%. We had a very, very aggressive goal. We misread how powerful a couple of our causes might be in our church, and we missed that goal. But the way we were able to communicate that is instead of saying we didn't hit our goal, and I believe that particular year our goal was over $300,000, and we had raised about $275,000. So instead of talking to my people about how we did not raise the 300 and something odd goal that we had, I celebrated the fact that we did indeed raise $275,000 toward the goal. And I just let it go. I didn't extend the Christmas offering. I didn't extend the end date, because once you write down the start date and the end date, you're going to need to stand by that unless there's one exception when you might need to extend it. And I'll talk about that as we go along. But especially if you've already got a end date into the new year, it's very, very difficult to extend it. If you have an end date that is on December 31, and then a number of people ask you if they can give in January, you might allow them to give to it and perhaps even extend it. But I would prefer to extend it because you hit your goal, or prefer to extend it because there's been overwhelming support in your church for extending it into the new year, than to have you extend it because you didn't hit your goal. In fact, not hitting your goal is never an appropriate reason for extending your offering period. But 8 out of the 10 times I have achieved the Christmas offering goal, and I've been able to stand up perhaps in the middle of January or at the even the end of December and talk about how we hit our goal. And here's what I found. People will still give even after you hit your goal. In fact, people like to be a part of a winning team. And so we still tell people that what you give over and above the goal is going to be divided between missions and our regular budget. And you'll see that in some of the complimentary letters and documents as you study those and adapt those for your own church. Now, hopefully you've been able to do some research. Hopefully you've been able to think deeply in the presence of God about your start date, your end date, and your goal. And right now those should be written in pencil. But by the time you get to the completion of this resource, and by the time you study the additional documents and modify the letters that I'm going to give you and start creating the packets, you are going to have to decide very specifically what your Christmas offering goal is going to be. And you want to do this in harmony with God. And you say, God, what is your will for how much we should raise, and what is the period of time over which you want us to raise that? And if God speaks to you in a very profound way and it goes against something that I told you, you go with God. But make sure you hear God speak, and make sure you're not acting out of some desperate need inside of your church or some exciting ministry that you may be enthusiastic about but has not proven itself to be something that captures broad engagement in the life of your church. Make sure you actually hear from the Lord. And then once you set this start date and once you set this goal, it might be good to have a cooling off period, a period of 24 hours or even a period of a week or two before you actually put that in print and send it out to everybody in your church. And that goes back, of course, to what we said just moments ago, that pre-planning is the key. And so often when I have a planning session in late September, I'm thinking about the time period, I'm thinking about the goal, but since my materials don't have to go to print until the middle of October, it gives me time to think about that and it gives me time to finesse it. And I often find I go through cycles where I think I don't have enough faith and I need to raise the goal, and then cycles where I have some uncertainty about whether or not we hit the goal. And generally speaking, if those two are in harmony, then I know I've got the goal that's perhaps in the middle. But I have strongly come back before and change the goal slightly in one direction or another during this cooling off period, as I begin to realize I was excited about something, but that doesn't necessarily mean my church is going to be excited about it as well, or when I have conversations with staff or conversations with key leaders regarding that. Now, when it comes to setting the start date and the end date and setting the goal, that generally is a staff decision in a church our size, but for you, it might be a committee decision. It certainly doesn't need to be a vote inside the church. There needs to be a group of people that sets both of these, and then you operate accordingly. But let God guide. And as the old saying goes, where God guides, God provides. And so by now, I hope you are starting to get excited about how much you can raise and about the period of time through which you can mobilize your people to give to this offering. And now you may be thinking, okay, I've got the start date, I've got the end date, I've got a goal. What do I need to do next? Well, I'm glad you asked. Let's talk now about what are the specific causes for this Christmas offering to be used for. And believe me, I did all I could to avoid using the pun, what are the specific clauses for this Christmas offering to be used for. Sorry, Christmas, Santa Claus, get it, causes. Okay, let's keep moving. What are the specific causes that this Christmas offering is going to be used for? Because if you're going to accomplish that goal during that set period of time, you've got to have some causes that touch people's heart. And then after we discuss this, we'll get into very specifically about how you then raise the money and communicate that. But I want you to understand that people give to vision. People give to vision, not to need. And so the reason you made all of those why reasons earlier is to help you begin to craft this vision. So you have to ask, why specifically are we doing this offering? Why are we raising this money? And then what is going to be our causes? Now, as I've mentioned several times, one of the best causes, and I think the single best cause to support with a Christmas offering, is missions. You know, you will be able to raise a lot of money for missions during the Christmas period. But that shouldn't be your only cause. And instead of focusing solely on one area, what I encourage you to do is to choose a few different areas that will resonate with different types of people inside of your church. Now, I do believe that missions resonates with the broad section of your church. In fact, I think it resonates with every Christian inside of your church, because if you're going to have the heart of God, you have to have a heart for the Great Commission and a heart for the world. And I've often been amazed and encouraged to see the number of people in the church who get excited about missions that I might have thought they could care less about missions. But yet there's something about missions, giving to international missionaries, giving to starting new churches outside of your local area, giving to mission agencies like your denominational agency, where they then support thousands of missionaries on the field or hundreds of missionaries. That can be really, really powerful. But at the same time, having a second or third cause can be important, because maybe you need to raise money for your children's ministry, or perhaps you want to do a special outreach for the needy in your community, or perhaps your church has made a commitment the upcoming year to support some special causes. Different causes will pull on the heartstrings in different ways. So here's what I suggest. I suggest you choose 3 to 5 very specific causes to focus on. I'll give you some examples here in just a moment, but I want you to understand, they have to be heart issues. They have to touch people's heart. They need to ignite a passion in people, and they need to be able to stand out above all the other noise and hustle and bustle of Christmas. Because people are being challenged to give to this nonprofit, and they're being challenged to give to the person ringing the bell down at the Walmart. And so your causes have to touch their heart in a way that causes them to give to your specific Christmas offering. In a report that you have in your notes that is a summary of this teaching that I'm giving you, I write this in there. I said, this isn't the time to raise money for new pews or the plexiglass pulpit that you've had your eye on, but it is a great time to bring in money to help support a new church plant or revamp your programming for the elderly. And I would encourage you to read that summary document. And in fact, that's a document that you will want to study, and it is a document that perhaps you will want to give to your key leaders. And it's called How to Plan and Conduct a Christmas Offering and Why You Should Get Started ASAP. It's a PDF document that is a very short summary of all that we're discussing in this much longer resource. And it doesn't go in the same order. It's designed to be a motivating document versus a technical teaching like we're doing here. But again, this is not the time to raise money for the plexiglass pulpit or for the new pews or even for a repainting of the bathrooms. It needs to be a heart cause. Now, by the way, there are ways you can raise that, raise money for that in the Christmas offering, and I'll get to that in a moment. But here's the point. Choose one primary cause that your Christmas offering is going to be used for, and then select 2, 3, or at the most 4 smaller causes. So you've got your primary purpose for the offering, the primary cause for the offering, and then you've got 2 or 3 or so smaller causes. Let your people know that perhaps as much as 50% of the offering will go to that one main cause, and then the other 50% will be divided among the secondary causes. Now, as you study my materials and the letters that I've crafted over time and the FAQs that I've crafted and all that I'm giving you on the resources area, you'll notice that I never give a specific either dollar amount or sometimes even a specific percentage amount as to how this is going to be divided. I actually think that distracts people from giving. But I will tell them in general, the majority of the offering, or as much as half of the offering, or fully 50% of the offering, is going to go to the main cause, which for us is always national and international missions. And then the other causes will receive the other 50%. I don't necessarily get into what the percentage is going to be, because in essence, I structure how much I'm going to give to each of the causes based on how much of it comes in. Because it's not like if we hit 80% of our Christmas offering goal that 80% is going to be divided in some set percentage over all of our causes. If we only hit 80% of our Christmas offering goal, there might be a cause that receives no funding because it is the lowest priority on our list. So we simply aren't going to do it. We simply aren't going to give to that if we don't hit our goal. Now, this has not been a huge issue for me. As you know, we almost hit our goal or exceeded our goal 9 out of 10 times. And then there's only been one time where we didn't hit it. But let me talk about that one time we did not hit our goal. There was a fourth cause that I had in the Christmas offering. It was an important cause. It was one that I had a big heart for, and even some of the people in our church had a heart for. But compared to the others, it was not something that we gave to. And so we simply did not have the money to give to that fourth cause because we didn't hit our Christmas offering goal. And I let people know that. In fact, you'll read in the FAQs and in the communication documents that you have with this resource, you will see how I communicate that if we don't hit our goal, we won't be able to fund all of these different efforts. And so by choosing these causes, I then prioritize the causes. And I say, this is going to be the first cause. This is going to be the second. This is going to be the fourth. And then if we hit our goal, this is how we're going to distribute the money. And I believe that you need to make these decisions early on. Make the decisions about how you're going to fund the causes and about what causes are not going to be funded, if any, if you do not hit your Christmas offering goal. But then, of course, you will see that I am an eternal optimist in my promotion, and I rarely talk about what we're going to do if we don't hit our goal. There might be one sentence in there about that. Instead, I talk about what happens if it goes well. And I tell them if it goes well, then we're going to divide the additional giving between our primary calls and between next year's budget. And that simply means that some of the money that's given over and above the Christmas offering will be applied to the following year's budget to give us a leg up. And then, of course, that amount will be determined, or how that amount is spent is determined by the budget. Now, that's very tricky language, and that is advanced tactics that I'm talking to you about. So you may need to go back and listen to this section again, and you may need to study the FAQ sections of my letters to the church as I try to explain that. But the important thing for you now is to choose one primary cause and then to select two, three, or four smaller causes. So you're saying, okay, what should those causes be? Well, in your listener's guide, you see a breakdown of different causes. You see, for example, missions. Missions is a primary cause, in my opinion. It should be at the top of the list. And when I think about missions, I think about local missions that is being done perhaps in your country, or for me, this would be missions in the United States or in Canada. That would be national missions. But then I also think about international missions. International missions, for me, that would be the rest of the world. That'd be South America, Latin America, Africa, Asia, Europe, whatever it might be. Forgive me for leaving out Australia and Antarctica and whatever else I might be leaving out here, but international missions. Now, we actually are a partner with our denomination, and we support international missions through them, and they have over 5,000 missionaries on the field around the country, and there's a lot of information I can get from them about international missions. There's a lot of details about how they've made an impact in the different world. So I report this to our people, and you'll see some of that in the accompanying documents that you read about national and international missions. But then I often tie into that a second area, which is church planting. Now, I know a lot of church planting ties into missions, but sometimes there are specific church plants that we want to start out of our church. And over the years, we've started churches and different areas across the United States and up and down the eastern seaboard and even down into foreign places like Florida, we've started churches. And so I think church planting should be a big part of it. Now, oftentimes when I promote this, missions is like 3,000 missionaries nationally, 5,000 missionaries internationally. But then it's these two specific church planters that we're going to support. And often those are people who perhaps are on our staff that are going to start a church, or church planters that have come through our recruiting system that we know we're going to trust in a big way. And so I put them at the top of our list. And sometimes those three areas, national missions, international missions, and church planting, those are rolled into one in our Christmas offering. And that is our biggest cause. For you, it might be two or three separate areas. In addition, you might have evangelism as one of your causes. For us, we generally fund our servant evangelism efforts through our missions offering. Now, we have regular evangelism efforts, like our promotion for Easter or our different outreaches that we do in the city or and in our churches. that regular evangelism is funded through the budget. But our special emphasis, our evangelism that goes over and above what's in the budget, we might fund that through our Christmas offering. And that would be particularly if we have a special evangelism effort that's going on for a particular year or a particular emphasis that is not necessary to be in the budget, but it can be raised through the Christmas offering. Beyond that, we generally put the benevolence fund in our Christmas offering. This is an internal fund that we use to help people in our church who are in need, and we fully fund our benevolence fund through the Christmas offering, and people like to give to that. Next is outreach to the needy. Help for the poor, help for the needy, or outreach to the needy. We might fund that through our Christmas offering. In addition, we might fund our counseling efforts through the Christmas offerings. Sometimes I put benevolence and counseling together as one area. And you'll notice in some of the documents that you review, sometimes I do that. I only have four causes, but sometimes cause number two is an and. It's benevolence and counseling. And so I think you can do that along the way, particularly if it's a very small amount of money that you need to raise. Continuing on our list, children's ministry. Great area for you to raise money for is children's ministry. Now, you more than likely have money in next year's budget for your children's ministry. But perhaps there are one-time initiatives that you need to do in the children's area that are not covered by the week-to-week budget. Now, your budget is a great place to cover ongoing expenses, consistent expenses, week-to-week expenses. The Christmas offering is a great place to raise money for one-time initiatives. Now, having said that, and having given you this list, let me just give you a couple of other areas that might be on your what. For example, you might have some one-time initiatives in the area of student ministry. You might even have one-time initiatives in the area of senior ministry. You might have one-time initiatives when it comes to launching a new multi-site location. And many churches are going multi-site, and we're multi-site. And every multi-site that we've launched, we've done through our Christmas offering. And there might be a few other heart issues that are unique to your case. But let me go back to this point. These heart issues should be one-time specific causes as opposed to ongoing initiatives. Generally speaking, the Christmas offering is not a good place to raise money for ongoing initiatives. In other words, when I support missions, I'm giving a one-time gift or I'm making a commitment for the next year. So, for example, if I'm saying to a missionary that I'm going to raise money for you through the Christmas offering, I'm saying that the money I raise this December will be the money that I distribute to you over the next 12 months. I'm making a one-year commitment. It is a one-time commitment. If I'm going to make a five-year commitment to that missionary, I can't put that in the Christmas offering. That needs to be in our ongoing budget. Same thing for something with children's ministry. If you're raising money for children's ministry in your Christmas offering, it needs to be for a one-time effort. It needs to be for something that you buy once and it's done, or you invest in once and it's done, such as new toys or a new crib or a new video system or whatever it might be for the children's area. You don't want to be paying for your ongoing curriculum needs, or you don't want to be able to pay for your children's pastor through the Christmas offering, because it's not one time. It's not time bound. The children's pastor salary is going to continue long after the Christmas offering is done. It's going to continue year after year after year if that person continues to perform in a powerful way.